Welcome to If You Love This Planet. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and in this program we talk about the greatest medical and environmental threats to all life, such as nuclear weapons and nuclear power, global warming, ozone depletion, toxic pollution, deforestation, and many other social and political issues that relate to global well-being. So if you love this planet, keep listening. Hello, and welcome to If You Love This Planet. This week on the program, my special guest is Jane Swanson, a mother and a grandmother who's been an active member of the Mothers for Peace organization since its formation in 1969. In 2006, the group challenged the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in federal court, opposing the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant in California, and they won. To tell us more about this case and other actions Mothers for Peace are involved with, Jane Swanson joins us now on the phone from California. Welcome to the program, Jane.
Thank you very much, Helen. It's my pleasure.
So what I'm interested in talking to you about, well, I suppose the whole thing, but the formation of Mothers for Peace, how did it originate?
Well, you can't get any more grassroots than the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace. And I won't say San Luis Obispo every time, but I do want to emphasize we are a local group. We're not national. We're here within our county on the central coast of California. We began when a young woman who happened to be a mother wrote a letter to the editor in our local paper, and her content was about the Vietnam War and how she felt helpless as an individual, and she was seeking people of like mind to join with her because she thought as a group we could be more effective in trying to wind down that unreasonable war. So we really did start as a peace group, hence our name. So a few people responded, and we started meeting in each other's living rooms, and I think it was by the second or third meeting that we agreed on our name, San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace, and it didn't take us too long to turn our attention to nuclear power and radioactive waste as our main issue.
And San Luis Obispo is on the Californian coast. Now, is that the nuclear power plant Diablo Canyon that was very near the primary residence of Richard Nixon at the time?
Well, it depends on how you think of it. Richard Nixon's residence was definitely downwind from Diablo Canyon. The San Luis Obispo is on the central coast, so it's exactly halfway between Los Angeles and San Francisco. You can picture that. Mm-hmm. And 90 miles downwind is Santa Barbara, so that's not a good place to be because the prevailing winds tend to go south. And then the greater Los Angeles area is, well, I'm just estimating somewhere around close to 200 miles south of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant, if there were a fire releasing radioactive substances into the air, there's a distinct possibility that the plume would go as far as that huge metropolitan area.
Well, when you look at the map of Chernobyl and the terrible consequences that it left, the whole of Europe is contaminated. So,
absolutely. Yes. Again, there's nothing worse than fire. I don't believe I'm telling you that. You know that. But when I talk to people I'd meet in the grocery store, you know, they say, oh, thank you for your work with the Mothers for Peace. And then they worry about meltdowns. And I say, well, a meltdown's a bad thing, but much worse is a fire, because then the cesium-137 and other radioactive particles become airborne, and they just go and go and go and go. Pretty darn hard to contain it.
Well, then of course, in Chernobyl, there was a meltdown, but a massive fire as well. Let's get back, though, to when was Diablo Canyon actually built, Jane?
Yes. Construction began in the late 1960s, And in 1969, Mothers for Peace was active as an anti-war group. But a few of our members read about this excavation, this huge dig happening about 12 miles from San Luis Obispo. And it was a nuclear power plant. And trust me, at that time, we did not know what that was.
Oh,
but
God.
We thought we should... Yeah, we started at square one. Like, what is a nuclear power plant? That's where we started. So again, grassroots.
Mm-hmm.
So once we found out, we realized we were in a unique position to make a difference because we live within a proximity to the plant. Our members live within, most of us, within 15 or 30 miles at the most of the plant. Then we can get legal status as interveners. And so that's what we've been doing since 1973. So whenever Pacific Gas and Electric Company that owns and operates that two reactors and the radioactive waste that's been stored there, whenever they try to make a change, pull a fast one, and now they're asking for a license extension till 2045, whenever they do something like that, we tend to file as interveners, which makes us a party to the legal battles that ensue from there. And we've been amazingly powerful for a small group of people.
Yes, and women. It's usually women that start these organizations, like Lois Gibbs at Love Canal and the like. So when exactly, then, did Diablo Canyon, the two reactors, open for business, so to speak?
Yes, the original license was 1984 and 1985 for those two units is when they started operations. And so all of the spent fuel, all of the radioactive waste that has been created by that plant is stored right next to the plant. And the really bad, that's bad enough. But we're California, so everywhere you go, there's another earthquake fault. And there are either 13 or 14, I'm slightly confused on the exact number, but there are more than a dozen earthquake faults in the immediate vicinity of the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant and its waste storage. So it's a waste storage dump. It's going to be there forever because there's nowhere to take it. The earthquake faults there, the famous one that most people know about, that know anything about Diablo, is the Hosgree Fault, which was categorized by the U.S. United States Geological Survey as a major and active earthquake fault. Those are technical terms, which means not good. And to have a nuclear plant within 3 miles of a major active earthquake fault is contrary to the federal government's rules for nuclear power plants. But they went ahead and licensed Diablo Canyon anyway because the corporation had invested so much money. So that's what got me mad, and that's why we're still hanging in there.
But didn't they know that that earthquake fault was there 3 miles away when they built the reactor? Jane?
Well, they say they don't. It's a funny thing. Shell Oil geologists published in a trade journal the discovery of this Hosgree Fault in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until, I believe it was 1971, when the plant was, underway in construction, that PG&E recognized it and said, oh, goodness. There's an earthquake fault on the ocean side of the plant. See, they only looked on the landward side of their site.
Oh,
they
really?
Really? Really, I make that up not. That
and
is,
they call themselves scientists.
Yes, they seem to have. So, I was pretty naive back there in the early 70s, and I thought that since Diablo was built in a place that was unacceptable according to the rules of, it was then the Atomic Energy Commission, now it's the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, same deal, new name. So since it was against their own regulations to allow a plant to be in such a place, I actually thought that with the help of a good lawyer and some fine seismologists and geologists as our expert witnesses, I thought Mothers for Peace was going to be able to stop the licensing of that plant. But that's where I was young. I was in my mid-20s, and I learned that money speaks louder than logic. And so there you are.
Money.
So we've been working at it ever since, and now we're fighting license renewal because despite, you know, that the earthquake fault has not gone away, and more have been discovered.
Yeah.
And now PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric Company, wants the NRC to allow them to operate till 2045.
Okay, well, we'll get into that in a minute. How large are both of the reactors? Are they 1,000 megawatts each of them, Jane Swanson?
Yeah, they're each 1,000 megawatts.
Oh, my God, they're big. As we'd say in Australia, they're big bloody reactors.
They are. They're large, and the spent fuel pools are very densely packed. They're packed many times over as dense as their original design. The original design of the spent fuel pools, where the water and the boron are, was such that if you lost all the water through terrorism or earthquake or something, you would not have a fire or a meltdown because they were spaced out enough.
Yeah.
But in the ensuing decades, as there was too much spent fuel, and so they got permission from the regulator, from the NRC, to pack that fuel in so tight so that now the distance between the fuel rods is a fraction of an inch. It's really, really close. And if you uncovered the top, if the water drained enough to uncover a certain portion of those rods, I don't know how many feet, they're 14-foot high rods, but if the tops of them became not covered with borated water, then you would have a pool fire.
Where are the pools located, Jane? Are they on the roof of the reactor?
No, the spent fuel pools are right next to the a big long building. It's right next to the two reactor domes. So the reactors, of course, are under containment domes.
Yeah.
They love to talk about 4 feet of concrete and steel. Okay, that's nice. The spent fuel is very nearby, and it's under a flat roof, which I keep asking how thick that roof is and what it's made out of, and I've been told it's either 4 or 6 inches of concrete. So that's not enough to stop a weapon with a little explosive tip on it or something like that. So it's not, it's the spent fuel pools are one of the most vulnerable parts of the plant. And the source of information on that is not myself. It's the National Academy of Sciences. There are PhD scientists that have figured that out, not me personally.
And the roof, is the roof made of corrugated iron or tin, or is it a concrete roof, Jane?
Well, what you can see when you look at Google Earth, it looks like corrugated iron. But
does
I've
it?
Been told there's several inches, 4 or 6 inches, I'm not sure which, of concrete underneath there.
Oh.
So I'll take their word for that, but that's not really reassuring.
No. So let's go back then. You've got two 1,000 megawatt nuclear power plants right on the coast. I mean, they're just right on the sea, aren't they? They're just next to the beach. And I saw photographs of surfers, you know, with their surfboards coming up onto the beach right next to these two monsters. It's really a sight.
Exactly. About a year ago, I was on a tour of the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant. They don't take the general public there, but there are ways now and then when you can, you know, sign up and go along with some officials and get a plant tour. So here we were standing next to the intake where the millions of gallons of ocean water are sucked in to cool the plant. And the PG&E guide said the intake was protected from any attack or terrorism by ocean because the Coast Guard guarded it and no boats were allowed to come within 1 mile. Well, I just opened my eyes and looked behind the spokes lady and I said, excuse me, there's a yellow raft there. It looks like it's maybe, couple hundred yards out. Tell me about that boat. She says, oh, that's one of ours. And it didn't look very official. Well, a minute later, the Coast Guard came screaming around a rock, little protection of, you know, the ocean waves. here comes the Coast Guard with a megaphone out screaming at the people in that boat to get out to sea. We're escorting you out to sea. Get out of here. So with our own eyes, we saw, you know, a boat within shooting range of the intake. And then on the same tour, she announced that all nuclear plants were in no-fly zones, and I knew that was not a fact in the United States. It's not a no-fly zone. So I pointed straight up, and I said, well, excuse me, I'm looking straight up, and that's not a seagull. That's an airplane. It is straight up. Would you please explain that? Mm. And then she admitted that what is true is there's an advisory to pilots not to loiter over nuclear power plants. Yeah, and the NRC itself, the United States Homeland Security Administration, the FBI, all these federal agencies have a formal position that all nuclear facilities are, by definition, targets of terrorists. Now, how you can take that position and allow these things to continue to sit there unprotected is absolutely maddening.
Well, each reactor contains as much long-lived radiation as that released by 1,000 Hiroshima-sized bombs.
Right.
And each one contains 1 billion curies of radiation, and every year each reactor extrudes, so to speak, 30 tons of very, very potently radioactive toxic fuel. It's called spent fuel. It means it's just full of fissionable of isotopes made when you fission uranium, like strontium 90, radioactive iodine, cesium 137, and those rods, I mean, if you stand next to one for several seconds, you'll get a lethal dose of radiation and die in several days with your hair falling out, like radiation patients. So those fuel rods are taken along to the spent fuel pools that you've been talking about, Jane. Tell me, I know that in the spent fuel pools all around America, there's 2 to 30 times more radiation in those pools than there is in the reactor itself. Have you got any notion of how much radiation is in those pools at the moment at Diablo Canyon?
I don't have that number with me. No. What I do know is its vulnerability to fire. And those spent fuel pools that I described as being super packed.
Yep.
Well, even the plant operator knew that couldn't go further. So they have started what they call a dry cask storage facility. You probably know all about those. And so at Diablo Canyon, that's where the Mothers for Peace pressed our case in federal court and won a victory, because in that case before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, that's where it went into federal court. The NRC to that point had been insisting that there was no need to study the environmental effects of a terrorist attack on the dry casks at Diablo Canyon. And Mothers for Peace was saying, you know, no, according to the National Environmental Policy Act and a whole bunch of legal things, the NRC is required to do an environmental impact statement, environmental impact study that quantifies the environmental effects of a terrorist attack on even the dry casks. And we did win that ruling. The court agreed with the Mothers for Peace that it was necessary for the NRC to do that. Now, the NRC's response to that ruling of 2006 was not to do an environmental impact statement. Those are, you know, thousands and thousands of volumes, huge of scientific data. Instead, they came out with an 8-page environmental assessment. They called it 8 pages. And in that 8 pages, there was no supporting statistics or studies. They just said that based on the experience of the NRC, this is a quote, the effects of a successful terrorist attack would have no significant impact, unquote, on the environment. Now, there's a bit of lack of logic there. If it's a successful terrorist attack, you can't say it has no significant impact. But that's what they said. And so that's led us on to the next federal court case, which is pending. I'm sorry this is so ponderous, but, you know, we're back into federal court again. We won a significant victory in 2006, but we're having to follow up on it now with a second case that is asking the court to enforce the former ruling for an environmental impact statement based on science, and also asking the court to restore an appropriate balance between the influence of the nuclear industry and the public over the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. At this point, I feel like drawing a parallel with British Petroleum. There are amazing parallels here. Not exactly the same, but in both cases, there are a lot of rules and regulations on the books, but you can have stuff in writing, but it's no good if it's not enforced by the federal regulator. That's what happened with the BP spill in the Gulf of Mexico, the Mineral Management Services. It didn't enforce the safety regulations, those things designed to protect the environment and the public. They didn't enforce them. And so you had this horrible disaster. Well, you know, if an equivalent disaster happens at a nuclear power plant because the regulator continues down the road they have been on of not fully enforcing federal laws designed to protect the public, the consequences of that kind of catastrophe would make BP look like a picnic in the park.
Absolutely. And they write these regulations, but that Mines and Minerals Department, whatever it's called, was really obscenely corrupt. I mean, it was funded in the hands of BP and mining companies, and the companies used to take the employees, the public servants, out for weekends. They had sex parties, they had drinking parties. I mean, the whole thing was totally and utterly corrupt. Now, the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is supposed to regulate nuclear power, is actually almost all funded by the nuclear power industry. So it's not a separate body at all. It's actually part of the nuclear industry. So you've got judges judging the nuclear industry who are paid by the nuclear industry.
There are many parallels there. It's not quite as, I don't think they have sex parties with the NRC. I've met a lot of people that work for the NRC, and I'm sure they don't have sex parties.
How do you know, Jane?
Well,
I'll tell you what.
All
the years I've been working on this, their lobbyists are very beautiful, usually blonde young women who know nothing really about nuclear power, but are there as their PR agents.
You're the physician. I'll leave the sex part to you. But what I do know and can't agree with you on, of course, is the revolving door.
Yeah.
The regulators of nuclear power in the United States, you know, funny thing, they all come out of the nuclear industry and know those people. And the lobbyists are very powerful. And, you know, and again, I'm very impressed with my group, with the San Francisco Mothers for Peace, because we've been acting as legal interveners for 37 years. We're an all-volunteer organization. We pay our taxes, and that helps support the NRC. We are rate payers, so we are supporting PG&E and the running of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant that we don't want.
PG&E, PG&E is Pacific Gas and Electric, right? Go on.
Yes, correct. So they're the corporation that owns Diablo Canyon, and we're also fundraisers, because as we do our work to try to force the NRC to give more respect to public safety than it does to the corporate convenience of PG&E. I mean, we do pay our wonderful, groundbreaking attorney. We have an attorney that beat the band. Diane Curran is in Washington, D.C. She's on the other coast. She's a specialist in the NRC because those regulations and the way to use the legal system through the NRC and into federal courts is it's not anything like the court things you see on TV. It's just a totally different system. So she's our specialist, and we do also pay expert witnesses. So I'm not talking to you to raise money, but I am certainly mentioning that San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace, through our fine website, does enable people to support us.
What's the website, Jane?
The website is mothersforpeace.org.
Okay.
One word.
Mothersforpeace.org. Now let's get back to the reactors themselves. Each of them uses 1 million gallons a minute of seawater for cooling purposes. And so that means 2 million gallons a minute of seawater sucked into their pipes. And with that, huge numbers of fish and eggs and larvae are sucked in too, which are killed, number one.
Yes.
Number two, all of that sea life tends to block the pipes. And
yes.
Number three, the water that's discharged is really very hot. Now, it's thermally hot, but it's also radioactive, because one thing that nuclear power plants discharge with impunity is tritium. Tritium is made when atoms fission, as in nuclear power plants and nuclear weapons. Tritium is radioactive hydrogen, which combines in the food chain, which gets into human bodies, and which is very carcinogenic. And there's no way to prevent the release of large amounts of tritium into the water and air around reactors. The only thing that stops the release of tritium is gold, in fact. It gets out of everything else, concrete, stainless steel. So the seawater, after it's been through the reactor, will probably be contaminated with various isotopes, including tritium. But the point I'm actually getting to in this little soliloquy, Jane Swanson, is we haven't dealt with global warming. And you know what? The oceans are rising. And you know what? Diablo Canyon is right at ocean level. And you know what? As the oceans rise and catastrophic storms appear, which are happening more and more, that the control systems of those two plants could be drowned, and we could have definitely a bilateral meltdown, right?
I don't know all the mechanics of that. We're told that the reactors themselves and the spent fuel pools it was either 80 or 100 feet above sea level. But the intake and all the machinery that controls that is right there, sitting there, obviously, right next to the surface of the water. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, common sense says that would be entirely messed up by the rising levels of the ocean. I admit I'm not an expert on that particular aspect. I haven't studied that so much.
I think that's a very, very important aspect now, for reactors at sea level, but also for nuclear reactors being cooled by rivers. For instance, in France, where a large amount of their electricity is generated from nuclear power, as the river levels fall during drought-ridden periods, they have to close the reactors down because there's not enough water to keep them cool.
Right, and many times the water is not cold enough. The Pacific
That's right.
Ocean is less vulnerable to global warming than our lakes and rivers. But, of course, we've all read about multiple nuclear plants in the U.S. as well as France and other countries that had to close down during a heat wave some months ago because the water wasn't cold enough to cool the plant.
Yeah.
So. Sure, that's another reason why, another one of many reasons why nuclear is absolutely not the answer to global warming.
It's not the answer for anything except for bombs and cancer. So look,
exactly.
These reactors then, from my, they're 35 years old, right?
Yeah. Let's see. They were first licensed in 1984 and 85. But let's back up, because they were designed in the 1960s.
Yeah.
The Diablo reactors themselves are such dinosaurs. They were designed in the 60s. It took them forever to build it because, you know, they did Unit 2 backwards. You know how they...
Oh, that's right. They put all the, yeah, the mechanisms, control mechanisms in backwards. That's right.
Yeah, yeah, it was the seismic brace. Yeah, the seismic bracing, the earthquake bracing, they put in backwards in Unit 2. They read their diagram in mirror image or something weird like that. And the only reason that was discovered before the darn thing was licensed was there was an engineer who worked there that pulled some blueprints out of a garbage can and took a look and thought, huh, this is all backwards. And he gave the blueprints. He didn't want to speak up to his employers because he liked his income, but he passed it along to a professor at our local state university at Cal Poly, and he called that to the attention of the regulator and of Mother Trapeze, and pretty soon there was no choice. So it took them many years and $5 billion to fix the darn thing. And they had to fix many things. They also had to replace all their copper piping. At first they had copper pipe in there, and that really killed the sea life. You were mentioning the sea life before.
Yeah.
So they killed the abalone and some other sea life immediately by having the wrong kind of piping. Like, they couldn't study that basic chemistry. And then regarding the entrainment that you mentioned, you know, the plugging up of the intake by sea life, it was approximately 2 years ago, maybe less. There was our local paper called it, in a humorous way, they referred to a jellyfish attack on the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant.
Oh, yes, I read that, yeah.
But, you know, it's not funny. It's not funny. Because of global warming, there are these, what are they, flocks or herds? Anyway, large numbers of jellyfish, more than prior, and some of them are very large, and they come in large groups, and they plug up the intake of nuclear power plants. That's not a good thing. They had to shut down Diablo. They had to actually shut down at least one unit, maybe both, I can't remember, because of jellyfish. Now, that was one example. And meanwhile, the water temperature in the cove there is 20 degrees higher than normal, and PG&E loves to brag that there's so much happy ocean life there, but it's not native. It's not what used to be there.
Yeah, now, so let's say they're about nearly 30 years old, and what Pacific Gas and Electric, the owners, want to do is extend their lifespan for another 20 years. Is that true?
Yes. The current licenses are good until 2024 and 2025. PG&E wants to extend those to 2044 and 2045, and they applied for that permission. They applied November of 2009. So that's like a whole lot of years before their current licenses expire. And that's why Mothers for Peace, again, activated ourselves as interveners and are doing the legal process with our attorney, Diane Curran, to oppose license renewal.
On what grounds?
Yeah, many grounds.
Tell
boy,
us.
Go to our website, and boy, you can read all about it to your listeners who are really interested.
So just give us point by point, just briefly.
I can summarize it.
Yep.
So, let's see. We have four contentions there, and what they, in a summary, deal with is that their one big issue is the seismic one, because the newly discovered shoreline fault goes actually through the Diablo Canyon site. It goes within 300 meters of the reactors themselves. And that there are studies underway that will be done in 2013, and so Mothers for Peace is saying, you can't even consider license renewal until you have completed these seismic studies. And the other issues relate to the effects of severe earthquakes or a terrorist attack on the facility. So that's the big picture there. And so earthquakes a huge issue. And then so is terrorist attacks, because, again, like I said, the NRC itself agrees that all nuclear facilities are targets of terrorists. And it's Diablo Canyon, like all nuclear power plants, is not adequately protected at all from terrorist attack, and the possible effects of a terrorist attack have not even been studied.
Yeah, well, the other problem with extending the life of reactors is that as the metal pipes, and they're just full of hundreds, thousands of miles of metal piping, are sort of irradiated with neutrons for years and years and years, the pipes become what's called embrittled, and they tend to break and crack. And the steam generators do the same thing. And now also not only are these nuclear power companies extending their life, and not only are the pipes embrittled, but they're tending to increase the power output. In other words, instead of having 3% enriched uranium, which the reactors were designed to have, they're pushing it up to 3.5%, 4.5%. And there have been reports of nuclear engineers that the reactors are literally shaking themselves to bits because of this increased power output, and the pipes are cracking and breaking. There's a thing, Jane, called the bathtub curve, and it applies both to nuclear power plants and to humans. Mm-hmm. In the first few months of life, the baby is vulnerable to getting meningitis and whooping cough and all sorts of things. Likewise, a nuclear power plant, its kinks and problems are being ironed out in the first few years. And indeed, Three Mile Island and Chernobyl both melted down during the first few months of their life. Then during, you know, the intermediate years, people tend to be pretty healthy, adolescence, adulthood, midlife, same with nuclear power plants, they're stable. And then towards the end of their lives, which is, you're getting to that now at Diablo Canyon, pipes start getting rusty, start falling apart. I'm 72, my pipes are getting rusty too and falling apart. Deterioration starts to occur in the human body, as it does in the nuclear power plants. So to prolong their life is to gamble with the lives of millions of people.
Absolutely, and that is another one of our contentions in opposing license renewal, that PG&E has a dismal, dismal record, especially the last few years, of managing the Diablo Canyon plant. And by managing, I mean by complying with the safety regulations and controlling their equipment and training their people properly. So Diablo Canyon, PG&E is not doing a lawful or an adequate job of running the plant under control now, and that's another one of our arguments. We're saying, wait a minute, when it's that much older, how in the world PG&E can't show that it can manage this aging plant with its breaking part. PG&E has been replacing parts. They've replaced the steam generator, the reactor heads, you know, at a very huge cost to all of us who live around here. So there's an economic problem, but, you know, in the Mothers for Peace eyes, that pales by comparison with the safety problem. So you're right. Diablo Canyon, like all aging monsters, complex monsters, is falling apart and deteriorating equipment. You know, you can replace one part, but, you know, it's hooked up to the old pipe and the old wiring, and then you replace that, but it's hooked up to the offsite diesel power, which is old, and it just goes on forever. So it's not under control.
I'm interviewing Jane Swanson from Mothers for Peace in San Luis Obispo. Give us some examples, Jane, if you will, of personnel problems they've had where the employees haven't been working according to the rules that they should have been.
Yeah, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission inspectors, the NRC inspectors, do various types of reports and inspections of all nuclear plants out on a regular basis. Maybe four times a year, depends on the year. And these are public record. They're available on the NRC website. And I'm one of the odd persons who reads those over breakfast with a highlighter in my hand. And the inspectors, and this is, you know, employees of the NRC, not employees of Mothers for Peace.
Yeah.
So they have identified what they call an adverse trend in, in problem identification and resolution. That's the formal language. And what that means is, whether it's because, I don't think the people that work there are slobs, but, you know, either their training is deficient or it's not possible for humans to manage something this complex that's changed so much. The way you control the various aspects, or, you know, when they have outages and put the darn thing back together and online again, the specific procedures that need to be followed in order to be sure the thing's going to work and not cause a huge problem are very, very complex. So one example is that just about the past year, there surfaced a huge problem with a valve that wasn't set right, and so there was a loss of control of the emergency cooling system for a while, for many months, because what happened was the PG&E employees looked at the specified procedure specified by the NRC of how to set their valve, and they said, oh my goodness, this will take us 3 days, but we're under pressure to finish this outage and get this thing back online quickly. And so they figured out they could do a shortcut. So they did a shortcut, and they didn't check with the NRC and get permission to do it like they're supposed to, and they did it wrong. And so there was, again, this compromise of the emergency core cooling system. That's one example out of dozens and dozens and dozens. So over and over again, the training or the procedures or human error and aging parts, they don't fit together and things are not done right.
No. Well, okay, now let's get personal, James Swanson. How far away from the plant do you live?
Oh, I'm about 11 miles due east of the plant. The plant's right there on the coast. So I'm a little bit east, and there are maps of the air currents. So we've looked at those, and the air currents swirl around in a circular fashion. So should there be a radiation release from Diablo, I figure it's going to go in a nice circle and come and settle on my head. Anyway, so we're definitely within range.
How many people live in San Luis Obispo?
Yeah, the town itself is in the range of 60,000, and then there's a state university there that adds another 20,000. So, I don't know, somewhere around 60,000 to 80,000. And then the county itself is somewhere around, I could be out of date on this, I think 120,000, something like that. So in the NRC's eyes, we're a low population zone. They've always called us a low population zone and told us we're so lucky because the plant is miles away from the nearest community. I think the nearest community is 6 miles from the reactors.
And so what is the general consciousness level of the people living, the 60,000 people living in San Luis Obispo, about those two reactors on the coast?
Yeah, well, you know, the young people are rather alarmingly unaware. And because my role is volunteer spokesperson for the San Luis Obispo Mother Trapeze, and it's on my mind all the time, I try to chat with, you know, young people I meet in the supermarket or, you know, the clerks, anywhere. And I say, well, you know about the nuclear power plant that's just a few miles away. They say, what? There's one around here? They say, well, Diablo Canyon. They say, oh, yeah, I've heard about that. Is that here? You know, the young people don't seem to know about it. It's the people who've lived here a long time do. And that's, of course, one of the goals of Mothers for Peace is to educate the community. And, you know, we go out and we have a lovely PowerPoint-type presentation and we speak to various civic groups.
Well, what about the local media, the radio, the TV, and the newspaper? Do they talk about it much?
Not as much as I want them to. When there's a new development, I do write press releases, and our attorney Diane Curran is so lovely. She checks them for me because we're very, very conscious of our need to keep our credibility as a volunteer group here. So I don't pretend to know it all. I do my best, and then I send it to Diane, and she edits me and changes my language so it's precise. So we send out these press releases, and then I phone the local newspaper and some of the broadcasters. And there's one TV station that will usually do a two-sentence interview of me. There's one radio station that will usually do like a 10-minute interview that's broadcast at 6:30 in the morning. The local newspaper varies. I don't know what it depends upon. There is a very competent reporter at our local paper who does understand the issues, thank goodness. So when articles are printed there, they definitely do a big service in educating the community.
Does every household have inert potassium iodide tablets to take in the event of a meltdown to block the uptake of radioactive iodine into the thyroid gland?
No, the California State Emergency Office of Emergency Services makes potassium iodide available through the health department, but you have to go get it. So you have to go fill out a form and ask for it, tell them how many people are in your family, and then they will give you a dose per person. What's interesting is that if there are children going to school and the parents want them to have at least protect that part of their poor little cells in the case of a radiation release, you can't have potassium iodide at the school.
Oh,
they
really?
Won't store it. No, they won't administer it. A parent has to be the one to administer it. So, you know, all the emergency planning, which pretty much it's in our phone books, so that's lovely. But what it basically says is in the case of a radiation release at Diablo, you know, turn on your radio, and we'll probably tell you to shelter in place, which means stay home and put duct tape around your doors and windows. Of course, that makes me feel very, very safe. So we have lots of duct tape, and I'm just fine and dandy. But, you know, if everybody gets on the road, you're just going to sit in your car in the plume. But
yep.
If any sane parent with a child in school, what would they do? They're going to leap in their cars and try to go get their kids. Maybe they'll have potassium iodide, but more than anything, they'll want to get them out of there. So, and we have Highway 101. We have one major freeway that goes up and down the coast.
Beside the plant, you can see the plant next to the road.
You cannot see Diablo Canyon from the highway. San Onofre, the nuclear power plant near San Diego in Southern California. Boy, can you see that one from the freeway? I've driven by it. It is absolutely terrifying. It's just big monster reactors sitting right there. I mean, they're so close. A shoulder fired missile, you know, would have no trouble getting that stuff around, all their equipment and stuff. I don't think the reactors are vulnerable, but they've got the same problems with their spent fuel storage.
And do the people in San Luis Obispo have a written document about what to do in the event of an emergency and a meltdown or a fire?
Oh, well, there's a two-page, I think it's 2 pages in the phone book.
And what do they say?
They say, you know, listen to the radio, and the Office of Emergency Services will tell you what to do. And then we're in different zones. So your zone depends on your proximity to the plant. So the theory is that they'll say, okay, zones 1, 2, and 3 should evacuate. Zones 4 and 5, shelter in place. I'm just making this up, of course, you know. Mm. Because if everybody gets on the road, that's not going to work. But we all know that in the case of a real emergency, we certainly don't have the roads to evacuate this area. And are people going to comply calmly with what the radio says, or are they going to be so in need of being with their family members? You know, nobody knows what would actually happen.
Well, do you know what at Chernobyl, the town like yours called Pripyat, which was like San Luis Obispo, just near the reactor. People were not told for 2 days, and it was a lovely, lovely sunny day, a spring day.
They were outside.
And people were lying outside on the tops of their apartments, sunbaking. The children were playing in the sand pits. Kids were going to school. I think actually it was a holiday, and there were parades in the streets. For 2 days, they knew nothing. During those 2 days, they received massive doses of radiation, and a new study has come out from the New York Academy of Sciences, and you can all obtain this book called Chernobyl, which has translated, I think, 5,000 papers, medical papers from Russian into English, which has shown that nearly a million people have died near the reactor from that accident, which occurred over 20 years ago. Now, if one of your reactors or both melt down, Jane Swanson, you are in the most dreadful, frightening, terrifying position, because, you know, I'm a physician. There's nothing we can do for patients who are covered with radiation, who've breathed it into their lungs, who've swallowed it into their gut. We can't get it out of you. And what the Federal Emergency Management Agency tells us to do is take the patients into the mortuary in the hospital and hose them down. That means the water will collect the radioactive elements from the surface of their bodies, and then that goes down into the sewage system. But there's no way we can get the radiation out of their bodies. And within days, people should know, people will be developing acute radiation illness from the massive dose of radiation you've received. Your hair will start falling out in clumps. You'll find when you clean your teeth, you're bleeding around the gums, that you will be vomiting, have terrible nausea and bloody diarrhea. And within a week or two, you'll die of massive infection because the white blood cells have been killed, like in AIDS, or massive bleeding. Now, do people know that in San Luis Obispo? If not, I'm willing to come and address a major public meeting and teach everyone what they're living with.
Helen, you did come here, and we sure need you again. You came here in, I looked it up, April 19th, 1979. You spoke in San Luis Obispo at the invitation of the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace. It was on campus at Cal Poly. And that is a part of what Mothers for Peace does, is we seek to educate the community. Are you serious that you would come back here? And
yeah, I'm deadly, deadly serious.
Well, I have your email now. We'll talk about that. That would be absolutely wonderful, and it's needed because 1979 was a long time again. We need a fresh dose of Helen Caldicott without question.
Well,
right,
you know, either they close those reactors down or the whole town gets evacuated. I mean, no one should be living where you're living. Nobody should be living there.
And that extends a long way. The I've got to hand it to the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors and 90 miles downwind, the Santa Barbara County Board of Supervisors. This is an elected body. And both of these bodies sent letters. They were worded differently, but the main idea, they sent letters to the NRC saying it is premature to even consider it license renewal at the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant because you haven't done the seismic studies on the newly discovered earthquake fault. So hold off, you guys. So there is some awareness, and the fact that if those issues were discussed in these meetings of this elected body, that helped educate a whole lot of people who, you know, because there were news reports written up about that, and of course some people were present. But, you know, and we do, I have to give PG&E credit, not credit, but anyway, there are sirens here. So if there were a major radiation...
Oh, you'd know you're about to be irradiated.
Well, that's it. You know, there are sirens. I don't think we would be in the position of the people of Chernobyl not knowing anything would happen. And I think it's to the credit of the greater public, not my group, but the greater public demand for, you know, more attention to emergency planning. So we have sirens, but what are you going to do? Like you said, you can't mitigate it. You might protect your thyroid if you happen to have your potassium iodide, but there's the rest of you, and there's the rest of, you know, your life, and there's all this stuff falling on the ground that you can't vacuum it up and make it go away. You can't mitigate radiation exposure. You can't suck it back up. You know, if there's a fire spewing radioactive particles, it would go a long way. It's always windy here, you know?
Yeah.
It would most likely travel a long way. So, I mean, you really, that's why Diablo Canyon should be shut down as soon as possible.
Well, your town, I have to tell you, your town, like Pripyat, will become uninhabitable for the rest of time. And you know what's gotten to me, Jane, through our whole discussion? I know you're motivated as a woman, a mother, and a grandmother by the very facts that we've just discussed, the horrifying medical consequences, and that millions could die if one or two of those reactors melted down. Yet, you know what happens to us? We get tied up in the legalese and the legal language, which means nothing. And it's so boring, and people turn their minds off. What we should be talking about is confronting them to say, do you know what we're sitting on? How dare you have those reactors there? How dare you extend the license? There's a big chance of a meltdown. You know, you've got to close those damn things down. And actually, when they close them down, they become radioactive waste storage sites for really the next quarter of a million years, oh, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And as the oceans rise, so they flood the dry cask storages and they flood the reactor cores, and out goes the radiation into the sea to concentrate back up the food chain in the fish.
Well, I agree with every word you just said. Despite that, we do use the legal channels, and the reason that seems to me, hard as it is, worth doing, like that ruling in 2006 in our favor, that changes the picture for the other 103 nuclear power reactors in the United States.
Mm.
And that ruling was backed up by the United States Supreme Court, the highest court in the land.
Yeah.
It was the ruling of the Ninth Circuit Court, which is the second highest court, was challenged by PG&E.
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court backed us up. So that is a very important legal precedent to set that we think nudges the NRC into doing a better job. Their mission statement, the mandate from Congress is for the NRC to provide, this is a quote, adequate protection for public safety. The word adequate is in quotes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our beef with the NRC and therefore with Congress, because you can't be a little bit pregnant or a little bit not pregnant.
Yeah.
And you can't be adequately protected from a monster like a forever radioactive storage site on earthquake fault.
Mm-hmm.
That's a non sequitur. You know,
yeah.
So you're right. We need to rave about that, and you're going to come to San Luis Obispo and help us get that message out there to everybody.
Yeah, well, I'll stir the bushes, so to speak, and we'll get all the doctors who look after people in that area involved, because they're the ones who will be on the front line. But they, of course, too, will be suffering from acute radiation illness. But I really, really admire what you've been doing, Jane Swanson, and Mothers for Peace since 1969. And, you know, it's usually women that lead revolutions, and then often the men take over. But you're stuck in there, and by God, you might really win and close those two monsters down. So I want to thank you so much for this interview today. I'm sure the listeners have heard a hell of a lot, and most people actually in the United States and many in Canada live near a nuclear reactor. I hate the way they call them plants. Nuclear
right.
reactors. Yeah, nuclear, yeah. Atomic reactors, they are. So,
yeah.
Jane, thank you so much for this interview. We're deeply grateful, and I hope to see you soon.
Well, I can't thank you enough for giving Mothers for Peace a chance to communicate with the planet, with all your many listeners in many countries. And your offer to come to San Luis Obispo is now that will be front page with every newspaper in this area and way beyond. We'll get them from Santa Barbara and everywhere. So thank you so much for your generous time and for your offer.
Okay. Thank you, Jane.
Bye-bye.
On If You Love This Planet Today, I've been speaking with Jane Swanson from the Mothers for Peace organization based in San Luis Obispo, just near Diablo Canyon. Diablo Canyon sits adjacent to or on top of 14 earthquake faults. And interestingly, it's called the Devil's Canyon, Diablo Canyon. How about that? Thanks for listening this week, and we'll be with you next week for another very informative and maybe fascinating program. Bye-bye for now.
You've been listening to If You Love This Planet with Dr. Helen Caldicott. This program is broadcast on community radio across the United States, including our host station, KPFT Pacifica, Houston, Texas. This program is produced and engineered by Jazz Williams, co-produced by Scott Powell, and our publicity and outreach are coordinated by Amanda Bellerby. To listen to previous shows or to make a donation, go to our website, ifyoulovethisplanet.org.